everybody. I'm Jim Nintzel, recently retired as executive editor at the Tucson Weekly and sitting in today for Bill Buckmaster, who's enjoying a well-deserved getaway in the Pacific Northwest. The Buckmaster Show broadcasts from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on radio station 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news and talk, with worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today, we're going to be talking to independent journalists in Arizona who are working with the online platform Substack. Never heard of Substack? Well, you're not alone, but we're going to fill you in today. We'll be talking with Rachel Leingang and Hank Stevenson of the Arizona Agenda and Melissa Del Bosque of the Border Chronicles about why they are pursuing this independent path and the kind of news you'll find on their website. We'll start today with Hank and Rachel of the Arizona Agenda on the live line from Phoenix. They both worked at the Arizona Capital Times. Rachel has also worked at the Arizona Republic, while Hank covered education at the Arizona Daily Star. Last year, both of them left their jobs to launch the Arizona Agenda with the help of a big grant from Substack. I suppose we should start here. Rachel, Hank, welcome to the show. Rachel, let me ask you to explain what Substack is for our listeners who are not familiar with it.
It is basically like a publishing platform where you write stuff and send out newsletters. Pretty simple. It's not like a publisher per se. It's not like a newspaper or anything like that. It's just the tool that you use to write your publication.
All right. And how did you two get involved with Substack?
They were putting out a call for local journalists to make pitches of publications for some funding to try to kind of move into local news. A lot of the writers who write on the platform now are kind of like larger name national writers. There's not as many local ones. So I sent it to Hank thinking that Hank would want to do it. And he was like, well, what's our idea? And then apparently it was ours and not just his. So we came up with a pitch, and we didn't think that it would work at all, but they gave us the green light, and we've been going since then.
Okay, well, tell our listeners what the Arizona Agenda is and how they can find it.
It is a daily newsletter sent at six if you pay or 10 if you don't, that runs down all the stuff that's happening in Arizona government and politics. And we kind of go from the lowest level of government up to, you know, Congress, whatever is interesting and ties back to Arizona. And then on Fridays, we do our own original reporting, kind of deep dives into things. We like to do a lot of how things work, cheat sheets, kind of catching people up and letting them know how they can get involved. We describe ourselves as an insider publication for political outsiders. So you don't need to know everything. We'll catch you up. We'll help you know where your involvement could play a role. And then you can sign up at arizonaagenda.com. Spell out Arizona, not A-Z. So ArizonaAgenda.com.
All right. And Rachel, talk a little bit about, and we'll bring Hank in, I swear, Hank, I'm not trying to leave you out here, but
no rush. Rachel's a better spokesman for us anyway.
Rachel, talk a little bit about what it was that made you decide, hey, I want to go this independent path and leave behind my full-time gig.
So I've always been really interested in non-corporate journalism, but most of the jobs are in corporate journalism. And the longer I spent at papers that were owned by like big out-of-state corporations with overlords, the more it just felt like I was a square peg in a round hole. I didn't get the justification for a lot of things. I didn't understand like the top-down nature of how things work. And I'm not like a ladder climber type of person. I really need to feel a sense of, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing. And if it's just because someone told me, that's usually not enough. So I wanted to kind of try on my own, you know, kind of what would it be like to not have a boss, or what would it be like to be your own boss? This is something Hank and I would lament about often before we decided to leave our jobs. Like, what would it be if we were in charge? And eventually we just had this opportunity to put our money where our mouth was on that. And it was worth a shot. And I figured if it didn't work out, there used to be a great last hurrah in journalism, and maybe I'd go get a normie job and finally make some money and be able to pay off my student loans and, you know, own a house one day. But it's working, so I guess we're stuck with journalism for now.
So you don't have to go into recovery just yet.
Not yet.
Hank, what about you? What was it that decided, hey, I want to go this independent route?
I mean, I really liked my last job. I was running the Yellow Sheet Report at the Capital Times. But the thing that kind of put me over the edge is just the fact that they weren't paying my reporters enough to stick around. And there was just this constant churn of people. And, you know, kind of like the agenda, the Yellow Sheet Report is a insider publication. You can't run an insider publication with people who aren't sticking around long enough to become insiders. There's just kind of this general trend of managed decline in corporate media. And, you know, every year it got somewhat worse. And that is not a sustainable future. And like Rachel, you know, I was thinking, do I have to go get a real job? I can't continue to do what I was doing, you know, even for what they were paying me, it just wasn't worth it. And when you can't, you know, keep reporters long enough to get them up to speed, it's just really hard to put out a quality product. So, you know, Rachel approached me with this idea. No way in heck I was going to do that by myself. So Rachel and I came up with what I think is a really good product, which is kind of taking what I like to do, which is insider, very geeky politics stuff, and taking what she likes to do, which is kind of broad-based explainers, solution-style journalism, cheat sheets, you know, breaking down what politics means for an average person, and kind of putting those two things together into one newsletter has worked out great so far. I mean, we're just earning just below what we would have at our old jobs, but, you know, we've only been doing this for a year, and we've got well over 1,000 people paying to subscribe to the Arizona Agenda every morning.
So you feel like it's working out so far?
Yeah, it could be better, but it is certainly better than we expected it to be. We both walked into this saying, hey, this will be a fun thing we can do for a year with this grant money, but obviously, you know, it's never going to work out long term. But we've earned as much as we would have gotten through that grant. We're darn near what we were making in regular journalism, corporate journalism. And as opposed to those jobs, this is on an upward trajectory. You know, there's no limit to how well we can do, at least no limit that we can find so far financially. And it's just liberating to not have to have a boss that you're reporting to. And I don't mean that in the, you know, traditional work sense of a boss, but just to be able to set our own agenda, to be able to write whatever we want every day is really freeing. And I think it's allowed us to do, both of us, some of the best work of our careers.
And you say that, you know, you're doing okay, but obviously it never hurts to get a few more subscribers. So if folks want to do that, I think Rachel mentioned it at the beginning, but Hank, a quick recap, folks can subscribe at ArizonaAgenda.com. And what does it cost?
It costs $120 per year, and that gets you an email every morning rounding up this, you know, what's happening in state politics. It really allows you to plug into the things that matter in state politics. Some of that is just linking out to, you know, the best reporting in the state, in the political sphere. Some of it is our own original reporting. Some of it is deep dive investigative stories. Some of it is features. We really run the gauntlet of what we try to do with this publication. You know, it's not just an investigative news outlet. It's not just curating links. It's not just, you know, quick blog hits. So it's a little bit of everything. And I think that makes it fun to read and also fun to write for us.
Okay. I think, Tom, we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll come back with Melissa Del Bosque of the Border Chronicles, another Substack publication. And Hank and Rachel, why don't you hang on? We're going to pick up with you guys again at the bottom of the hour, and we'll actually talk some of what's going on in politics this year.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bonvoyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Ninsel. I'm the former editor of Tucson Weekly, and today I'm filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. You just heard Bill talk about how much he likes to travel, and yet, once again, he's out there. Today, we're talking about talking to independent journalists who are telling their stories via Substack, which is an online platform. We were just talking with Hank Stevenson and Rachel Leingang of the Arizona Agenda, and you can find out what they're working on at ArizonaAgenda.com, and of course, you can also subscribe, which they would very much appreciate. Now we're going to introduce Melissa Del Bosque, who works with Todd Miller on the Border Chronicle, which features in-depth reporting on the U.S.-Mexico border. Melissa, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I know Todd. He's the author of several books, including Border Patrol Nation and Storming the Wall. He's written extensively about the border and climate change and the frequent intersection between the two. But it's a pleasure to finally meet you. I've been following your work on the Substack. And you have written about the U.S.-Mexico border since 1998 for various media outlets, including ProPublica, The Intercept, The Guardian, The Texas Observer, and Harper's. And you won a 2020 RFK Human Rights Journalism Award as part of a ProPublica group reporting project inside the Border Patrol. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in border reporting.
Sure, yeah. So for the last 20 years or so, I've been in Texas, actually covering mostly the Texas-Mexico border for national and regional publications. And I've followed Todd's work here in Tucson for many, many years, and I always thought of him as sort of my Arizona counterpart, you know, and I was the Texas border reporter. He was the Arizona guy. And as the years have progressed, I've always thought it would be really great to have a publication where we could sort of bring all of the border communities together in the various states, because I think they have a lot of similarities, but also very specific differences regionally, and there's a lot to learn, I think, among different communities in the different states. So we started the Border Chronicle to sort of merge our talents, you know, Texas, Arizona, and we also cover California, New Mexico, and talk about border communities and what they're doing, migration, immigration, climate change. So we're sort of tackling all these sort of big overarching issues that border communities deal with every day.
And how was it you guys got involved with Substack? You like Hank and Rachel, I think you were one of the other group to actually win one of these Substack grants in Arizona.
Yeah, it was super cool because they picked a dozen people for this local reporting initiative Substack did. And it was funny because it was called the Local Reporting Initiative, but actually there were people from all over the world. There was somebody from Africa, there was somebody from Brazil, who were chosen. And there just happened to be these two publications in Arizona, which was really cool. So immediately we're like, hey, how's it going? We're in Tucson, you're in Phoenix, you know? So that was really neat. And I've learned quite a lot actually from Rachel and Hank, because I think they've done a lot of really good stuff, and I'm a big admirer of the Arizona Agenda.
And you guys are at thebordercronicle.com, correct?
Correct, yes.
And you're also, your grants run out, and you need some subscribers to keep doing this work, I would think.
Yes. Our grant is running out in about a week, actually. And so we currently have almost 3,000 subscribers, but we only have about 400 paid subscribers. So we're way behind Arizona Agenda. So come on, people. Help us out. We need more paid subscribers so that we can keep reporting on the border. And all of the reporting we do is on the ground. We do some investigative reporting. We do analysis. And we also do a podcast as well, which we want to expand.
And I was reading a story you recently posted about Nogales, Arizona, and you write that the city has been transformed, quote, into an unacknowledged refugee camp where Mexican and Central American families live in shelters or cram into one-bedroom apartments or homes in the city's most marginalized areas. Of course, everyone should visit the website to get an in-depth look at what's happening. But can you talk about Nogales and what you're seeing down there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation about what is happening at the border in terms of immigration policy, security. It's very confusing. People are very confused, especially, and it's very cyclical, right? Whenever we're in an election season, the misinformation and the disinformation really ramps up. And so what we do on our site, you know, sometimes we have discussion threads and things about, well, what is Title 42 exactly? What does it mean? Why do we see people coming in Yuma who are getting asylum, but then in Nogales, nobody is passing through or getting asylum? And it really depends on what country you're from. So Nogales specifically is receiving a lot of people from Mexico and Central America. And for them, Title 42 applies. And so they are totally blocked from seeking asylum, for being processed and requesting asylum. So,
and let me, I don't mean to interrupt, but let me stop you there and just say Title 42, we hear that a lot. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, no, thank you for pointing that out, because it makes my point. So Title 42 was implemented in March 2020 under the Trump administration, and it's a public health initiative. It's quite old and it's rarely used. And the idea was to implement it in order to prevent people from coming in who might have COVID. Public health officials, the CDC, have said that this has nothing really to do with COVID. It's just a sort of de facto way of shutting down asylum. And it's still in place. Biden has kept it in place. And so for the last couple of years, Title 42 has basically shut down the ports of entry, so that asylum seekers cannot come up to a port official or a border agent and ask for asylum. So that's what Title 42 is, sort of in a nutshell.
Okay, and then let's go back to Nogales and what you're seeing on the ground there.
Yeah, so in Nogales, what's happened now, since people don't have access to request asylum, and there's actually been quite a lot of conflict in certain states in Mexico. Guerrero is one state in particular where there has been a lot of conflict among drug cartels and military and so forth. So there's a lot of people from Guerrero right now in Nogales who want to seek asylum, but can't because of Title 42. So there's sort of grown this sort of, you know, de facto kind of refugee camp there where humanitarian organizations from the U.S. and from Mexico have come together to try to sort of figure out how to house people, how to give them resources and things while they wait for the ports of entry to open so they can actually request asylum.
And so on the ground there, obviously, a lot of people arriving hoping to find a way to request asylum. They can't, and you just have a really humanitarian crisis, I would think, developing there.
Correct. Yes.
Can you expand on that, what you're seeing when you go down there?
Yeah. There's humanitarian groups are really having to raise a lot of money and take a lot of donations and to sort of really expand their shelters, their food, you know, there's a lot of families, there's a lot of children, and people are sort of in limbo. They're not sure what to do because they can't go back to their towns because they've been, you know, shot at and
they're fearful.
Yeah, their homes have been burned down, so they have really nowhere to go. So, you know, they're there just sort of in limbo, I guess, waiting to see if they're going to have some sort of legal pathway to...
And can you address the whole question? What is the situation with COVID in Nogales? Are people getting vaccinated down there? Is COVID, a big health issue in these communities?
Well, I was at a shelter called the Kino Border Initiative, and... which is run by a humanitarian group from Arizona. And I have to say, it was one of the most impressive shelters I've ever seen. It was huge and newly built, and it was built with donations from people. And people are tested there, and they get vaccinated for COVID. And a lot of people will even arrive there already vaccinated. You know, Mexico has a pretty robust public health system, actually, and they do vaccinate people. And so I see a lot more mask wearing down there and awareness about not spreading COVID than I do in the United States.
And we have a question from a caller who works in the health field and asking about what about undocumented aliens coming through who could pose health risks?
I guess that's a question of, do you mean somebody who, I guess, comes in the middle of the night without any type of agent or somebody intercepting them? A lot of the folks that I'm talking about here are families who are waiting to cross in a legal manner. They want to present themselves to a U.S. authority, and they will have already been vaccinated and have a card that shows they've been vaccinated. And people are still mask wearing there as well.
So these are families that are hoping that the Title 42 restrictions get lifted so that they can go through the process of presenting themselves for asylum as opposed to the folks who are crossing without documentation.
Correct.
Okay. Tom, let's take a quick break here. And no break, Tom says. Can't. Oh, because we had the hard break for the news. Okay. Well, then we're going to keep going. This is live radio. I'm learning the ropes here. I'm filling in for the legendary and experienced Bill Buckmaster. So in terms of about how many people are we talking down there in Nogales who are in this situation, who have arrived and are waiting to cross? Or is there even any way to estimate that?
Yeah, that was a question I asked because I was very curious about that as well. Like if the city... the mayor in Nogales in Mexico is counting, you know, how many people are there, tracking the data. And I don't think they are because people are sort of moving around, you know. They'll stay and for a few months, and then if they get frustrated, they might try another city. But I was told, you know, a few thousand, probably 5,000 or 6,000 people.
And you mentioned in Yuma the situation is different.
Yes.
So talk about that. How is it different over in Yuma?
In Yuma, you know, over there by the Morelos Dam, and you see it a lot in political ads and so forth, there are these gaps in the wall, and these are where asylum seekers are presenting themselves. And this is because the port of entry is closed. So they have to come this unorthodox route. And these are folks from mostly Cuba, Venezuela, countries that, you know, aren't contiguous with us, not Mexico or Central America. These are countries where it's harder to return people, or their countries won't take them back. So then those folks can bypass Title 42 and be processed for asylum, you know.
Okay, and we've got about a minute left, but as I understand it, because of Title 42, if some an undocumented person crosses, the Border Patrol can just send them back. And then they can keep trying because they don't have any kind of record of having been stopped by the Border Patrol, any kind of official record.
Right. And that's why the numbers are so elevated of encounters that Border Patrol is having. About 25 to 30% of those encounters are just repeat crossers.
And I want to talk about that when we come back, because obviously that's playing into the political narrative that we're hearing a lot about here in this election season. Obviously, a lot of people talking about the number of people stopped at the border and the record numbers of folks who are there. But we're going to take a break, finally, get to that news break, and we'll be right back after that.
CBS News Brief. The city of Jackson, Mississippi does not have enough water to fight fires or even hand out to residents in need. CBS's Janet Shamlian is there.
Kids are home indefinitely as Jackson Public Schools have gone to remote learning because there's no running water in the classrooms. And while the state says it will fix the water treatment plant here, there is no word on when Jackson's water will be safe to drink.
The FDA has authorized the first updated COVID-19 boosters in the U.S. FDA Commissioner Robert Califf.
I urge all individuals to consider receiving a booster and encourage other practitioners to speak to their patients about the importance of these boosters.
CBS's Linda Kenyon says the DOJ has laid out its case about efforts to retrieve government documents from former President Trump's home.
The Justice Department states classified documents were likely concealed and removed from former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate as part of an effort to obstruct the federal investigation.
CBS News Brief, I'm Matt Piper.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona.
all made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Ninsel, retired Tucson Weekly editor, and I'm filling in today for Bill Buckmaster, who's enjoying the cooler climes of the Pacific Northwest. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio on 1030 KVOI The Voice. We love Green Things and everything for your garden and great Talavera pottery from their sister business, Zocalo Village, on the 13-acre Green Things property at 3384 East River Road. Open daily and on the web at greenthings.com and zocalovillage.com. And today we're talking with Melissa Del Bosque live in the studio and on the Buckmaster Live line presented by Rincon Ventures. We have Rachel Leingang and Hank Stevenson of the Arizona Agenda. Hey, thanks for sticking around, guys.
No problem.
And I wanted to talk about the actual politics of what you guys are reporting on, as well as the platform that you're using. So let's talk about that. I don't know if it's the marquee race of Arizona, but that might go to the governor's race. But I think it's definitely going to be the most expensive one, and that's the race for U.S. Senate between Democrat Mark Kelly, the incumbent, retired NASA astronaut, and Blake Masters, the tech guy, who's worked for Peter Thiel for many years and is launching his political career. Hank, you actually profiled Blake for Politico, and I think you're one of the few reporters he's actually been willing to spend a significant amount of time with. And talk about what you came away with.
Yeah, Blake is a interesting guy. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of politicians in my life, and Blake stands out as different from most. I think part of that is, he's 35, maybe 36 at this point, young guy. Also, very involved in, what do you call it, the dark MAGA world, the new right, I guess, which is kind of a offshoot of Trumpism that is kind of sweeping the Republican Party as of late. But also just, I think his background in tech makes him kind of think differently than a lot of politicians. One thing that kind of stood out to me was I watched him, it was actually at an event down in Green Valley. And after the fact, we were kind of talking, it was, one of these Republican clubs, and it was a standard stump speech. And he asked me, what did you think? What can I do better? And I thought, like, man, I've talked to a lot of politicians in my life, and I've never had one honestly ask me that question. So I think that kind of gives you a little bit of insight into the ways that, Masters is somewhat of a unique candidate. He also, gets himself into a lot of trouble by just speaking off the cuff. I'm sure most of the listeners are familiar with his talk about Ted Kaczynski and how he was one of the underrated thinkers of the 20th century, which is not something any politician who thought that through would have said out loud. But Masters just goes there, and he goes there on a lot of topics, and it's going to be really interesting. We're already seeing kind of how he has to pivot to the general election. He's stripping things that he has said off his website. He's walking things back. He's preparing himself for a general election audience, which is going to be far different than the primary election audience that nominated him.
Rachel, I wanted to mention that the whole abortion issue. He's obviously gotten a lot of attention for walking back in kind words, flip-flopping in others on what he said on the topic of abortion, talking about what you talk about. Can you talk about what the sorts of things he was saying and the sorts of things he's saying now, and kind of in response, I think, to some of the ads that he was seeing from the Kelly camp?
Yeah, I think it's become clear that, especially nationwide, that issue is an incredibly motivating one after the court's decision in the Dobbs case. And He previously, his website had said, I believe, I'm 100% pro-life. That's since gone away. And his commercial that he cut is more along the lines of, I believe in common sense, approaches, like no late-term abortions and sort of that kind of language. I think that's because they're probably seeing how this animates voters, this issue, and that the typical person does want some level of access to abortion, typically up to a certain point. You can definitely sense that there's a lot of polling going on in the background, and he's not the only one, I should say. Nationwide, it seems like in a lot of close races, that issue is being, I guess, shall we say, adjusted in ads and on their websites to better reflect where the electorate is on the issue.
And he's also talking a lot about immigration, and how Mark Kelly's not doing anything to stop folks from crossing the border. And as you see the immigration issue playing out in politics this year, Melissa, what are your thoughts on how it's being discussed in these commercials and in mailers and these sorts of just does the general rhetoric you're seeing compared to what you see as the reality on the ground?
I think the rhetoric has just become so distorted that it's really so difficult now to have like a sort of fact-based policy discussion about how to fix things at the border, especially now, because it is, for the GOP, it's like their top issue is, you know, continuing on from the Trump era of build the wall, you know, shut things down, and Biden's border crisis. Hashtag, you know, so it just feels like people just yelling at each other and nobody really listening.
And Hank, they put the Governor Ducey was very proud of these shipping containers he dropped along the border in the Yuma area. But from what I hear, we're still seeing pretty much the same number of people coming across. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Did you catch that fantastic photo of the kid just kind of sitting on top of him like it was a nice patio he was hanging out on?
Yeah.
Surprisingly, just putting a bunch of shipping containers along the border did not solve our immigration problem. But I think it's probably worth noting that, you know, just like Republicans are kind of walking back their extremist stances on abortion, we've recently seen Katie Hobbs, just in the last couple of days, come out with a tough on border ad where she's walking along the border with some sheriffs. You know, there's a lot of adjusting going forward as we're heading into November here, but on both sides of the aisle.
And I guess our other we have a lot of big races in Arizona this year, but the governor's race is certainly going to take a lot of oxygen in the media world. And Hank, can you talk a little bit about this race between Carrie Lake and Katie Hobbs?
Where to even start? Yeah, last polling we've seen is generally statistical tie, and I think we'll see that up until, you know, Election Day. It's going to be a squeaker on whichever way it goes, I assume. You know, Carrie Lake has a difficult road to hoe ahead of her because, frankly, you know, Donald Trump lost Arizona 2 years ago. Not only is she not acknowledging that loss, but she's running a very, very Trumpian campaign and doesn't seem to have the capability to kind of pivot to the center, as we've seen from Blake Masters or even from Katie Hobbs.
She doesn't even seem to be pivoting to the middle of the Republican Party. She's talking about how she's destroyed the McCain machine and things of that nature following her primary win.
And McCain, you know, there are still a lot of Republicans in the state who are loyal to John McCain, you know, or at least to kind of what he represented in politics. And by just, you know, throwing those people under the bus and completely maligning them at every opportunity, she is not, you know, repairing those divisions that were sown in the primary election, and she's certainly not winning any Democrat votes. I think that Democrats have a great opportunity this year in what should have been a very bad year for them because of the far-right nominees on the Republican Party that are just, you know, in line with their primary election voters, clearly, but I don't think in line with the broader electorate that turns out in a November election. And unless Carrie Lake can show some capability of acting like, you know, a politician trying to win a race, I think that it's, you know, looking relatively good for Katie Hobbs. And I wouldn't have said that a couple of months ago, you know.
I want to pick up on that point when we return. We're going to take one more quick break and then wrap up the show.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
We continue now with the Buckmaster Show. Jim Nintzel here for Bill Buckmaster, who's enjoying a wonderful getaway in the Great Northwest. And if you're looking for a getaway from the Tucson heat, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico offers at least 10 degrees of relief, and it's only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for tips on great places to stay and tons of recreational activities. And we're going to continue now with our conversations with Rachel Linegang and Hank Stevenson of the Arizona Agenda on the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And Melissa Del Bosque with the Border Chronicles here live in the studio. If you're just joining us, both publications are online with Substack, a platform that gives independent journalists a place to publish their work and build readership and hopefully build subscriptions so reporters can make a living. You can visit ArizonaAgenda.com and theBorderChronicles.com to find their work. And Hank, you were just making the point that, Carrie Lake doesn't seem to be pivoting very far and towards the center, and that might be blowing an opportunity for Republicans to hang on to the governor's office, depending on how much she alienates folks. And to me, it almost seems like there's a clash out there between two political theories. And one of them is that if you go too far to one side or the other, you're going to lose the swing voters in the middle, and you're going to lose the general election. The other is that the party in the White House tends to lose seats and state races in a midterm election. So I guess I'd ask you, think that's what's the big test at stake in this election?
Yeah, I think certainly, in a traditional year, you would expect Republicans to do very well this year just because of who is controlling the White House, for example. There's always a little bit of a rebound after a presidential election year. But I think there are a variety of factors this year that are kind of throwing that into the air. Part of that, I think, is the abortion question. Democrats are generally pretty hard to get out to vote. It's, a matter of turnout, as all elections are. And this is a very animating issue on the left. People are really upset about this U.S. Supreme Court decision and what it could mean for their reproductive rights. So I think that has, to some degree, kind of scrambled the traditional thinking of what 2022 will look like. And then I think, in Arizona specifically, we have just the Republicans here have nominated, people like Mark Finchem, who is just a far out there extremist on just about anything you can think about. People like Abe Hamadeh, who has no real political experience. He's, younger than I am. He's barely ever been in a courtroom, and he wants to be our next attorney general. People like Carrie Lake, who, is a fantastic on a stump, has a magnetic personality, but also just seems to have this total aversion to doing the things that traditionally politicians will do to get elected, which is, move to the center, try to appeal to a broader audience than just your MAGA warriors. And she's just shown no interest in doing that. So I think that, in spite of what is kind of the traditional way of thinking, it's, this is going to be a bad year for Democrats. There are some factors throwing that into question here in Arizona, at least.
And Rachel, let me ask you about the impact of the media on all of this, because, while we know about these characters, I don't know how well all of this is getting reported, because it seems like the media is really struggling to fund political reporters and to focus in on in-depth stories about these races. And I'm wondering, obviously, you guys have left the traditional media and started your own independent thing. And I wonder how much of an impact you think that has in the political sphere in an election year.
That's a hard question to answer, because I do think there still is a lot of very strong political reporting out there and in venues that it has been for a long time. We do still have several large papers in the state that do watchdog work. And I think the challenge here is, how do you cover? It's the same as like the Trump problem. How do you cover people who, their whole goal is to get attention, but like the Carrie Lakes of the world? If you're more often covering their outrageous comments than kind of diving into the actual stakes of a race, that's a hard line to walk. And I think that's something that we struggle with too. How much attention do you give to something wild, you know, when it takes attention away and you don't have unlimited resources?
And obviously there's an effort from Trump on down in the Republican Party to discredit the media and to say you can't believe anything they say. And how much of an impact do you think that has? And also, I guess, also the question of how do you go about reporting on people who are saying things that are simply untrue and fantastical, like Mark Fincham out there, who just says things that, you know, you simply they're not true, I guess, is what it really comes down to.
Right. For us, it's pretty easy because, like I said, we have no bosses, so we just call it as we see it. There's no reason not to call a spade a spade. If someone's lying, they're lying. That is what it is. I do struggle with, you know, the politicians who they will constantly try to discredit the media, but if they like a story that a news outlet puts out, they'll definitely boost it and use it to provide them some credibility. They know that there's a role that we play here. It's all just a campaign tactic. And, you know, what do you do when people use this constant campaign tactic against you? What do you do when, you know, print reporters are showing up in, you know, attack videos from candidates? I don't know. It's weird. I have to wonder who cares about that. I think for a very small segment of the population, that might be a issue that they care about. I think for most people, it's the sideshow. And I think, you know, the more that journalists put an emphasis on that, the more it can provide a distraction when really, like, we should be telling people what they're voting for, you know, and let them know how to get involved in these processes. So I don't know. I always kind of struggle with this question.
I struggled with it myself when I was working back in the days when I had a job, and how you handle, do you run down every rabbit hole and try to explain the crazy theories that are being thrown out there, or do you ignore that and just let them say those things? And I'm curious, Hank, your thoughts on Mark Fincham. Obviously, he wants to run the election system, but he has some pretty curious theories about how the 2020 election went and how he would go about administering elections in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, very, very weird theories about how the 2020 election went. He continues to repeat lies that have been debunked thoroughly long, long times ago. But he seems to genuinely believe this stuff. And that is almost a scarier prospect than somebody just regurgitating lies because they think that's what will get them elected. Mark Fincham, I've known Mark Fincham for a very long time, and I recently wrote something for Politico, actually, about just the shock that I think his former colleagues had in realizing that this guy has been nominated as the representative of the Republican Party to a statewide office as important as attorney general. I mean, he was a backbench lawmaker who was, you know, the butt of jokes, even from his Republican colleagues at the Capitol about, you know, his intelligence, his dressing style, all sorts of things. It was, you know, Mark Fincham was more or less a laughingstock at the Capitol, and now he's the one laughing because the spectrum, the political spectrum has just shifted so sharply in recent years that, you know, he almost seems prescient at this point. Like, he was ahead of the curve in getting quite as weird as the electorate has gotten. So I think, you know, watching Mark Fincham, that will be one of the most interesting races. I'd speak to, you know, moderate Republicans. I don't even know if you call them moderate Republicans, but just mainstream Republicans all the time who are really fighting with the question of, can I vote for Mark Fincham? And on the other side, you know, they don't want to vote for Adrian Fontes. He's a, you know, pretty liberal guy. And that's a big stretch for people to make, to go from being a Republican to voting for Adrian Fontes. But at the same time, do they want to encourage the kind of takeover of their party by people like Mark Fincham that they've seen in recent years? So I think that'll be one of the most interesting questions of 2022 is, what do those Republicans who don't believe all these election conspiracy nonsense do on races like the Secretary of State, and specifically because that is such a, you know, that's a chief elections officer in the state, and can we really encourage a, you know, person who does not believe that our elections are free and fair to run our elections?
All right. We are going to have to leave it there. We've got about 30 seconds left, but I wanted to tell folks ArizonaAgenda.com. You go over there and you can subscribe to Hank and Rachel's work and keep them in business. Same with the BorderChronicle.com. Head over there, subscribe, and help these folks out because they're doing important work. Thanks for listening. I'm Jim Nintzel, filling in for Bill Buckmaster. Have a fine day.